patients, mental health services, and more, regardless of your immigration status or ability to pay. For more information to enroll or renew your NYC Care membership can be found at nyccare.nyc or at 646-692-2273. NYC Care in New York City. Healthcare is for everyone.
For the better part of a century, Hour of the Wolf has given WBAI listeners the opportunity to listen to many of the great classic voices of science fiction and fantasy literary luminaries, ranging from Octavia Butler.
I had God charge Martha with creating a better human species.
To Frank Herbert.
Kabbalah is a person who can be many places at once.
From Ken Liu. To Ursula K. Le Guin.
Physiologically, for 25, 26 days a month, they are no gender. They are ungendered beings. And then they go into heat.
We also bring you many of the up-and-coming creators in the field, as well as genre movie reviews. In the past, you had to visit Morning Twilight or Witching Hours to hear the show, but now you can find host Jim Freund with new guests and classic recordings as part of WBAI's Art Strip, Monday nights at 9 p.m. Join us.
And Hour of the Wolf coming up momentarily here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Streaming at WBAI.org. I'm going to start the music and trust that we will be joined by all the participants in short order. Stand by.
And good evening. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund, and with us, after Dan Persson's review of Starfleet Academy, which, by the way, I don't know what he's going to say, I liked it, we will then be joined by Randy Dawn. So stay tuned. Thank you. Okay.
Are we going straight into Dan or something?
Yes, we are.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. So Holly Hunter, as Nala Akay, Chancellor of Starfleet Academy and Captain of the USS Athena in Star Trek Starfleet Academy, which debuted its first two episodes on Paramount Plus this week, drapes herself casually over the command chair on the bridge of her ship, her back propped up by one armrest, legs dangling over the other, and people love it. At least a lot of people seem to love it. I'm not so sure. I get that this is supposed to be a lighter, more fun brand of Trek focused on the young cadets of the newly reformed academy and all that youthful energy, and Akay is supposed to embody that as a kind of Dead Poet Society wild card within the staid corridors of Starfleet. But her abuse of furniture in the first episode and her going barefoot during a strategy session in the second episode feels a bit overcalculated, like the producers are so desperate to distance themselves from Gene Roddenberry's ennobled vision of the future that they push the wacky meter just a bit too far. How much have they overstepped? Stephen Colbert keeps cropping up on the school's PA system, dropping one-liners like, "Hangry is your worst enemy." The idea of a Starfleet Academy offshoot of Trek has been knocking around Paramount for something like at least three decades. Initially, it was supposed to be a young Kirk and Spock adventure to court the youth market and probably get away from Shatner's and Nimoy's inflated paydays, something they eventually plowed into the first Kelvin Universe Star Trek film. Now, it's set in the far, far future of Discovery, with the Federation still struggling to pull itself back together, and the Academy re-established to train a new core of idealistic young people to pick up the mantle of their predecessors and boldly go. In that way, it does carry forward the idealism of the Trekverse. There still seems to be a bit of misunderstanding of what a Trek future should look like, though. That goes all the way from a portrayal of a penal system that doesn't look much different in its humanity than what we've got now, all the way to, and I admit I may have missed a crucial plot point that would explain this, the Athena apparently firing upon and destroying a ship and its crew rather than just disabling it. And we've got yet another series that seems to be about callow youth learning about life and growing into full adults, that they're various species from diverse cultures, and one of them is actually an autonomous hologram, may add something, but we'll see how far they can take it. The performance I was most taken with was Gina Yeshari as a badass Jem'Hadar/Klingon hybrid cadet master. I want to hang out with her more. Frankly, Star Trek Lower Decks nailed how to make humor work within the Trek universe better than Star Trek Starfleet Academy has so far. But the season is young, and the show does have potential. It's worth a look and a chance. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Thank you, Dan. And I will make a couple of comments. I'm one of the people who really enjoyed it. I haven't watched Star Trek in a long, long time. I gave up in the middle of Voyager. And it just got, you know, icky. And I thought, oh, give this a try. The first episode, by the way, is on just plain old Paramount, and it's free. So you can just go see that, and you have to start coughing up money to see it later. But I watched the first episode saying, who's that woman? I know that voice. And it's like, that's Holly Hunter. And I was sold. I didn't have. And then when she, as Dan said, drapes herself over the captain's chair in this totally relaxed thing, and she doesn't bark orders. She explains. She just says them. And woe be to the person who doesn't follow them. So Paul Giamatti is Paul Giamatti, which means he's great. I don't know any of the other actors, but I agree with Dan about the hybrid Klingon and Jem'Hadar, something that I haven't heard in years, since like DS9. Oh, and the captain is a Bajoran for the Treks out there who like that kind of thing. Anyhow, hi, Randy.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Are you still wearing your con head, or have you?
A little bit. I just got back from Aresia, and boy, are my arms tired. No, I took the took the train. So.
Yeah. Okay. You didn't run. That's a good thing.
No.
Boscone is in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'll be back at that.
Yeah, I would like to go because my boss from Lightspeed, Nightmare, and Fantasy, Stefan Rutnickian, is one of the guests of honor.
Ah, terrific.
I would like to go, but no, my body isn't up to it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm still in physical training and occupational therapy and all that stuff yet there. And these sound like good conventions, but I don't know if I'm going to be going to anything before ReaderCon.
Okay. Well, that gives you till July anyway.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll still be doing physical therapy at that point and walking with a cane. But I'm hoping for it to be better. It's that or Capclave.
I'm hoping to make Capclave myself.
Have you been before?
Oh, yes. I've been like 3 or 4 times. I'm from Maryland originally, so any chance I get to get back there makes me happy.
Yeah, I like Capclave a lot. It's ReaderCon is pretty much my favorite, Capclave my second, and I'm frightened of WorldCon. They're big.
It's big. I've been to a couple of World Cons, and they're big and unwieldy, but if you find your little slot, you can make them work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll make a mark, sit on it, my name in front instead of wearing a badge. Hello, my name is.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's basically, where is it this year, World Con?
I believe World Con is in Los Angeles, Alameda, California, but basically they're calling it LA Con. I believe that's where World Con is. I have a tendency to get World Con and World Fantasy confused. So I believe World Con is Los Angeles, but I would not, you know, stake my entire life.
No, World Fantasy usually stays in one place, doesn't it?
No, I think it moves around.
Does it? Okay.
World Fantasy was in Brighton, UK, and it's certainly not going to be there again right away. So I think they both shift around.
Oh, okay. Well, WorldCon always does. The voters for the Hugo Awards and everything else vote for the next location.
Yes.
And people put together a bid.
Yeah. I just wait for somebody to tell me where these things are, and then I make plans.
Yeah. It used to be that you could look in the back of the magazine of fantasy and science fiction and have a list.
Right.
Of upcoming conventions. And,
oh, that would be very helpful if they still did that. But there's so many conventions.
Oh, I'll ask Cherie Renee Thomas.
Please ask her to get right on that.
Well, she is the editor.
It's true. Yeah.
So, you know, she can make that decision. She can tell somebody who works for her or ask Gordon Van Gelder, who's the publisher and was the editor until, about 4 or 5 years ago, Barbara?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. You have events coming up.
I do have a lot of events coming up. So I run something called the Brooklyn Books and Booze, which is a monthly reading series where we have 4 authors come in and read for about 20 minutes apiece. They bring their books, they do signings, they get to meet with the fans who maybe come in to hear them read. And we've got one coming up on Tuesday, like literally tomorrow night, with some really incredible authors. We've got the great Ellen Kushner. We've got Amanda Cockrell. We've got Caitlin Razakis. And we've got the one, of course, that I am now blanking on. And I feel terrible because I do. Say?
Say?
Oh, Michael Swanwick, of course. Oh, my God. They're going to kill me now. I'm never going to get invited over there again. Sorry, Michael. This is Conbury. Yeah. You have to understand. This is Conbury. So
the most nominated
science
fiction fantasy writer of all time.
Oh, right. Okay. How could I forget that?
And so when I mentioned that to Michael, anytime he's been on the show or whatever, he says, yes, which means I've lost more than anybody else. And that is the deft humor of Michael Swanwick.
Exactly. He's very dry.
Yeah.
His martinis are dry. His humor is dry. That's our group of four. I mean, like, that's four excellent reasons to leave your home on a cold Tuesday in January.
Yeah.
Plus, we have a special drink that is themed. It's at a place called Barrow's Intense Ginger Tasting Room, which is in Industry City.
And boy, is that a well-named place.
You know, it's one of those places that just, to me, at least, I don't know if this is why they call it that, but to me, it screams SEO. So like if somebody is typing in ginger tasting room, like it's one of those names that is so long that I think it's meant to be, it's easy to find if you're trying to Google it or something.
Yeah, so, it has, their main drink there, mm-hmm. is sort of a ginger honey alcoholic beverage that no matter, and perfect for a very cold night. It will warm you real fast. My problem is that it's so sweet, mm-hmm. I worry about being a diabetic, which I am. But I'm a type 2 diabetic. My A1C is in perfect order. So every so often I can cheat.
Right. Yeah, they make their own ginger liqueur there, if you haven't already been, and they try to work it into our various drink of the month. I try to do a special drink that goes with at least one author of any given month, and this one is being called Down by the Riverside and is themed to Ellen Kushner's Riverside series of books that includes Swords Point, which also gives me the opportunity to have a little plastic sword that goes with a drink.
Oh. So
there's already been discussion of dueling going on. So we're very excited.
Oh, no. She'll do it, too.
Uh-huh. 100%. So, yeah, and the other authors are just as great, too. But it's definitely worth coming out. We start at 7 o'clock. We go to 9. It's totally free. And we usually get a really nice turnout. So
yeah, the drinks aren't free, but the admission and the
right, yeah. are free. Like, the admission is free. The books cost money. The drinks cost money. But right. you don't. And then usually sometimes there's giveaways and everything. So you never know what's going to turn up. The yep. other thing that I'm really excited about, actually, is Brooklyn Books and Booze is sponsoring our first ever author book fair on February 7th. It's on a Saturday rather than a Tuesday, which is usually when our readings are. So on Saturday, February 7th, we have like 15 authors, three agents. We're going to have presentations, a raffle, and all of these authors are going to be there to sell their books. So that's also at Barrow's Intense Tasting Room, which is at 86 34th Street in Brooklyn. It's part of Industry City.
Yeah.
And that'll go from 11 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And we are hoping that people will come out, not just to find their next favorite author, get a great book. By the way, it's the weekend before Valentine's Day. Books are very good gifts for Valentine's Day. But we also have three different presentations. Author agent Lucien Diver is going to do a talk about writer, how the market can guide what a writer might decide to write. We also have these three agents that are going to kind of do a speed dating thing, where if you sign up ahead of time, you can pitch yourself for 5 minutes to your chosen agent.
I know some agents who have done that.
I think I did it myself way back in the day at Thriller Fest. And it was terrific. I really liked it because you have to boil down your pitch into just the right amount of time, and then you get a little feedback from them. And sometimes you'll get a card where they say, send me something. So that's a really great thing. If you go to my website, brooklynbooksbooze.com, there is a place where you can sign up. And, you know, the slots are limited, but if you sign up, we can see if we can get you a space with your chosen agent.
Yeah, the book fair is a great idea.
We don't have enough of them here in New York. I mean, we have the great big ones like, you know, the Brooklyn Book Fest.
Or, yeah.
Or, but we don't have a lot of small ones.
Yeah, and nor a speculative fiction themed one.
Right.
And we've had readings for a while. Gordon Van Gelder started the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, which at some point I took over.
Mm-hmm.
And for quite a few years. But I stopped about I stopped with COVID.
Yeah.
And went to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if people want to look up my channel on YouTube, you can see a few.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since then, I have moved literally from Brooklyn to Queens,
mm-hmm.
The far-flung reaches of Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And once we unpack everything and I find my hard drives, I will post more stuff on YouTube there. And we're recording this very interview right now.
Mm-hmm.
That will also go into my box on YouTube. I have to figure out how to sort things on YouTube.
Yeah,
it's not easy.
It's a learning. There's definitely a learning curve. I had technically a channel, but nothing that really anybody would want to see. It's just more of a storage area for me at this point.
Yeah, and mine was that, but I've started putting things up as they happen.
Yeah.
We'll see when we can get this show.
We'll see. So yeah, anybody who wants to come out to the Brooklyn Books and Booze Author Book Fair, again, go to brooklynbooksbooze.com. There's all the information on our readings and then information on the book fair. And we would absolutely love to see you come out and get some books and, you know, like I say, meet your next favorite author this way.
Yeah, I may actually come out for that. I have been mostly immobile, mm-hmm. except between hospitals and places like that. But heck, my partner is one of your readers.
Exactly. I was going to say, you have a personal connection to at least one of our authors there. So Barbara Krasnoff.
I certainly do. Maybe I can con her into selling my CD as well.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, this is kind of an experiment. We haven't done this before. It's a different sort of room. They're different size tables. You know, it's an enclosed environment, but you can get food, you can get drinks. Industry City is a great place to hang out for the day anyway.
And it's a strange, fun place.
Yeah. You know, and if this goes well, like we might do another one in August, which would be partially outdoors, and then we'd have even more space for more offers. So that's kind of the goal at the moment.
And the way Industry City is laid out, that would work well.
Yeah, I think it would. Yeah. So, you know, please come support us, and we're hoping that we'll be able to make this more of a regular thing.
All righty.
Yeah.
So what have you written? Why are you on this show?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been doing very much. I hit upon this really weird trifecta last year because actually in 2024 when the publishing house that published my debut novel, Tune In Tomorrow, The Funny Fantasy, they suddenly wanted two more in the universe of Tune In Tomorrow. And one of those is coming out in March. And that's called We Interrupt This Program. So those are sort of the funny pop culture fantasy, the stuff that I've written. But then another publisher that I was in touch with, Ark Manor Kazik, they wanted two books of mine that actually I had written a while ago, but I couldn't find a home for. And all of a sudden they were like, we want both, and we want them both to come out in 2025.
Wow.
So last April, The Only Song Worth Singing came out, which is basically Irish rock stars being chased by scary fairies. And the other one that came out, I still have not gotten a good stand on one foot pitch, but basically it's called Leave No Trace. And we have the Gillydew, the green man of the forest, and his friend who is a young human woman who has, her father took her off the grid and has sort of been raised in the forest. And into all of this comes two musicians who are trying to escape a scandal out in the real world. And they come with their manager and they want to go on a bear hunt. They saw Deliverance and they did not get the message or the correct message. They want to go on a bear hunt. Unfortunately, the bear in the woods is Ardeo, the bear goddess from Irish folklore. So needless to say, things are not going to go well.
Right.
And in the backdrop of all of that in Leave No Trace is that there's a war going on between fae and humans, and there are reasons for that. And some of these characters are involved with that.
So do you have a milk white steed?
There is actually, yes, we have
There has to be, if it's Irish folklore.
Yeah, we have Clydna, the queen of the Fae, or the queen of the Banshee, and right. She shows up on her white steed. So yes, there is definitely that happens at one point.
Yeah, whenever it turns up in poetry, especially that which has been turned into song by, let's say, Oh, mm-hmm. Steel I Span, we'll mm-hmm. hear at the end of this show.
Right.
There's always a milk-white steed, Fairport Convention.
And the white horse.
Steel I Span, it's all...
The white horse is very important in Irish folklore in general. And I like the idea, I mean, the Gillydhoo is from Scottish folklore, but I also have Irish folklore. In my world building, they all kind of live side by side and know one another one way or the other. So
yeah.
I don't have a problem with mixing.
And they're all fae.
Yeah, well, not everybody's fae. Like, there's certainly a lot of humans in this, but yes, they are fae characters.
Well, on the supernatural side.
Yeah, yeah. So fae. They all live on the other side of the veil. You know, they call it the green place.
Right.
But they seem to bleed into the human world.
A lot of my favorite lore in there, and much of my favorite music.
Ah, yes.
Which is why you'll hear Steel I Span
mm-hmm.
at the end of this program
doing
Sails of Silver, which is the title song of their 1980 album.
Very nice. I'm a big Clannad fan.
I like Clannad a lot.
Clannad has that aura and that folklore going on, whether it's not whether it's directly or not.
They did the music for a TV series.
They did Harry's Game, I believe it was called.
Oh, they may have done that. They also did Robin Hood.
Yes, that's true. Right. I forgot about that one. But yeah, Harry's Game is the one I keep thinking of because the theme to Harry's Game is one of their better known songs.
I'm going to have to check that out after this program.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds real cool. So the music and my tastes
mm-hmm.
very much align.
Yeah, and music is very much a through line in both of these books because we have rock musicians on tour in one, and then we have musicians who are trying to get away from the world. But to me, music has its own inherent magic to it. So I really like blending all of that with the actual magic we're talking about in the books. And although Leave No Trace and The Only Song Worth Singing are not, one is not a sequel to the other technically, they both refer to the Fae world as the green place. And in my mind, I have a third one in mind that might weave them together. So
cool.
Stay tuned.
I look forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, and there's a good deal of fantasy writing that takes place in that world, including Michael Swanwick.
Aha. Yes, exactly.
In the Dragons of Babel. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually part of a trilogy, but that's my favorite book in that series. And Elizabeth Hand has an Irish rock band featured.
Yes,
and there's
Emma Bull who wrote the War for the Oaks. That kind of kicked off a lot of the more modern urban fantasy.
That Emma Bull.
Yep.
And Will Shetterly.
Yes, but she wrote War for the Oaks. Well, I know they've done stuff together, but that particular book, I believe, is just hers.
Okay. Okay. All good books, everything we are mentioning here.
Yeah. But
tonight we are featuring Randy Dawn. And by the way, if you want to type it out on your computer to search, it's RANDEE. And Dawn, which is what happens when the moon goes away.
Right.
And the sun decides to come back.
Exactly. AllOneWord.com, RandyDawn.com, and you will see a section for books, and everything I have contributed to or full books that I have written are all linked there for you to get copies of, should you so desire.
Very cool. So, rumor has it you're going to read for us.
Rumor is correct in this case. So We Interrupt This Program is the next in this sort of funny fantasy that mixes with pop culture, and that's the one that's coming out on March 3rd. So I thought I'd read like the first chapter from that to see if this is something you want. But just to backtrack a little bit, Tune In Tomorrow, which came out in 2022 and then got a new cover in 2024 and an additional epilogue chapter. That one was about a reality show that is created by Fae characters for mythical audiences, but starring humans, right? So the whole idea is that they're fascinated with our toings and froings and comings and goings, whereas we're excited about their magic. Magic is very boring to them. They like our mundane stuff. So there's this whole thing called the Seely Court Network, SCN, which coordinates all these programs. And so we interrupt this program, like, lives in that universe. And there are a couple of characters who come over from Tune In Tomorrow, but it's not technically a sequel. So you can totally read them completely separately. And if it's all right, Jim, I would start reading. Is that okay?
Absolutely. I'm going to mute and blank myself and come back when you're done.
Okay, sounds good.
Approximately how long do you think the reading will be?
I think we can do this in about 20 minutes. I read it last night at Aresia, and I think that's about how long it took. So I think
That would be perfect for us. Okay.
Yeah. But cut me off if I go too long. It's early. Okay.
All right.
So this is the first chapter, or the prologue, for We Interrupt This Program. The title is Provoke the Muse. Zeus's short hairs, Calliope muttered to Janus. I'm bored. Instantly, the stack of paper in the goddess's to-do box shot up an inch. You look too busy to be bored, said Janus, lowering their pair of stylish sunglasses. That's not how this works, said Calliope, who is the muse of epic poetry, among other things. Janus drummed their fingers on their thigh. The two-faced god of gates, change, and other shifting spaces had dropped into the office of Muse Central on the 925th floor of the Seely Court Network building on a godlike whim and with a mundane expectation to take Callie out to lunch. Unfortunately, Callie had kept them waiting for an exceedingly long time, and they were starting to get hangry. I don't know how any of this works, they said. It's been a minute since I visited. Indeed, the goddess noted archly, about a century or two. You've been conspicuously absent since you recommended that we pair up with the Seely Court Network honchos on their Trope Town experiments. Janus shifted uneasily in their cloud chair, which floated in front of Callie's desk. I've been around. Ever heard of a little Fae-run streaming show called Tune In Tomorrow? Janus had spent the last several decades in the self-created position of writer's assistant at that reality series, where they'd spent their days alternating between reading and stirring stuff up. Immortals had time to do that sort of thing. No, you see, I've been working. Callie kept her eyes glued to the computer screen, the muse's lustrous curls strained at a bejeweled hair clip. Dark wisps escaped, making her look frayed. And were those bags under her eyes? You can't ignore lunch, Janus sat up straight. I hear the commissary has a new ambrosia recipe. Grapes, mandarin oranges, and a fluffy human concoction that combines being both cool and whipping. We must indulge. Go then, report back, Callie sighed, lifting a sheaf of paperwork as thick as her head. The inbox inched up with more paper. It never stops. The requests for inspiration from showrunners. Humans were challenging enough. Seely requests are worse. I forget what day it is. It was, in fact, Thursday the 15th of November, 11:57 Greenwich Mean Time, midway into the 21st century, but immortals like the Muses and Janus only cared about the component parts of time as a hobby. Callie's wall calendar was merely decorative. It featured a different half-clad legendary poet offering a sultry gaze to the camera each month. It had last been updated in April 1916. Yeats. It had been left on W.B. Yeats. Janus glanced around the bright, high-ceilinged room to get the full 360-degree view of Muse Central. Like the entirety of SCN's alabaster and marble edifice, the wing devoted to muses was cozy and sterile simultaneously, shaped by curved, stark walls and a floor-to-ceiling set of window panels. An azure sky filled every glass pane. Ringed around the room gleamed 9 crystal desks, each with its own hovering cloud chair, though only 4 were currently occupied. Callie hit send on her latest inspirational request. The computer rang out. Ting! She winced, then stared at Janus. Would you please remove those glasses? I can barely see your face, and you don't even need them. But they look so glam. Janus pushed the sunglasses up on their head. The pair came from a basket that had been set atop a plinth at the far end of the Muse Central Corridor. The sign hovering over the plinth read, SCN employees required to wear Ray-Banning glasses from this point on. "They're for Sealy," said Callie, glaring at her computer as if daring it to ting again. "Inspiration isn't just something we muses do, it's something we are. Fellow gods are immune. Humans used to be more receptive. But with Sealy, it appears we passively affect them at a distance. They are quite helpless." "I love it," Giannis clapped their hands together. "Sealy are delightful to mess around with." The muse glowered, "Do not interrupt me." Giannis held up their hands in exaggerated submission. No need to provoke the muse. Not before lunch, anyway. Callie continued, "We conspicuously inspire individuals and groups, but even when we aren't doing that, it's impossible to turn off the effect entirely. Unsealy are less receptive to our charms, but Sealy positively get their wires crossed. Fuses blow. Catatonia is possible. A human visitor once explained that it was like holding a magnet close to a computerized device. Sealy brains overload with too much presence." Giannis nodded, twirling their sunglasses. "So these ban your inspirational rays." "They diminish them," she gestured around the room. "Hence our private wing here at SCN headquarters, to avoid disorienting the executives." Giannis tucked the sunglasses in a pocket. "Understood. So about lunch?" Ding! Callie's computer chimed again. More sighing. "So boring," she said. "Being bored was new once, and now it's also boring." "You sure that's the word you want?" Giannis wondered. "How about overwhelmed, underappreciated, or melismatic?" "I'm melismatic," piped up Euterpe, muse of song, music, and lyrics, from her nearby desk. She was taking a break after conducting a score in the air. "Of course you are, darling," Giannis gestured around the room. "By the way, where is everybody? You're barely half full in here." "Some of our sisters are less dedicated to the idea of a job than we are," noted Talia, muse of comedy, as she wrapped up inspiring a new challenge video involving sliced mangoes and nostrils. She pressed a button on her keyboard that would make it go viral on Arachne's Veil wide web in an hour. "We're the responsible ones." "Imagine me responsible," Callie told Giannis. "I will never understand how you convinced me to spend some of the best years of our immortality doing this." Giannis pressed their fingers on their chest, scandalized by the attitude. It had seemed like such a good idea at the time. For hundreds of moon cycles, SCN had created entertainment series for mythical creatures by mythical creatures, starring humans. At first, this had been a fey lark, not unlike the creation of pop music or fairy cakes. But Sealy survival depended on being believed in. Without belief, without being seen, noticed, and acknowledged, Sealy began to fade into irrelevance, which was essentially death for their immortal kind. But it turned out that creating endless entertainments to be endlessly watched by an endless array of mythical creatures who couldn't get enough of human shenanigans filled up those belief coffers beautifully. Then, approximately 100 years ago, the Sealy announced a grand experiment, topographically restricted, outer perimeter, environment towns. Towns, which would be small thematic villages on this side of the veil, stocked with humans, almost all volunteers, who would live there full-time and star in SCN-produced movies. Giannis, who had expertise in working alongside human actors on SCN TV series, was invited to advise. Loving being both a problem creator and a problem solver, Giannis found the idea of human terrariums run by Sealy irresistible. "Give them a safe village to live in, free housing, and a guaranteed job," Giannis had suggested to the SCN executives. "Humans will be happy to surrender their privacy and independence for the perception of safety." And they had. True, 100 years in, trope towns were still in the working out the kinks stage, but the official SCN guide could be amended as needed by SCN executives. For example, deciding what to do with human younglings in trope towns was an ongoing debate. But the first big hurdle had been in selecting Sealy, who would run the towns and direct the films created in each trope town. They were known as showrunner mayor directors, or SMDs. The hitch was that while Sealy were great organizers, leaders, and movie directors, they had no idea how to create compelling stories. Keeping the flow of scripts constant required the skills of human writers and a source of regular inspiration. Enter the muses. Seeing an opening for the sisters, Giannis put their names forward, deciding it would keep the ladies useful and entertained, not bored. Backfiring had occurred. "I was only trying to share the love," they cried. "I've had such a delightful time with nutty human actors. It was so edifying to help out those adorable brownie assistants at Tune In Tomorrow." And you ladies were restless. Humans no longer worship you properly. They're all captivated by their odd little screens now and call what they put on them content creation. You nine were positively pining away, and pine is not a good look on you. Oak, maybe, but not pine. And now with AI, shouted Arado, muse of love poetry, clicking send on a list of fanfiction inspirational concepts. Horrors, creative machinery, inspiration for ones and zeros fed the good stuff, then regurgitated like bird pap? She shook her head in disgust. Humans. Ting! Calliope's left eye twitched. "I know your right heart was in the right place, Giannis. When this enterprise started, there were barely 4 T-Towns. Any idea how many there are now?" 5? 78, Callie shouted. She pruned off an additional inch of requests from the stack, then stared at it with glowing dark eyes and crumpled them in her fists. Her regal brow was coated in a thin film of sweat. The mythical audience is insatiable for human toings and froings. It is an atlas-sized burden, and honestly, things, ting, are out of, ting, control. Yanking the crystal computer from its stand, Callie hurled it over her shoulder. The device crashed through a window pane and disappeared into the empty sky. Wind swirled into the newly created aperture, sending the discarded papers into the air. "Oh, Callie, that's the 3rd time this week," Euterpe's voice was full of minor notes. Whirling from the shattered window, Calliope was a vision of frustration, flushed and full of thunder. On the human side of the veil, at least 3 poets' hearts imploded. The wind whipped at her curls, and she was magnificent in her office attire. Half toga, half pantsuit, both white, her shoulders heaving. "I'm losing hair," she cried over the rush of wind. "I've got hives on my knees. I haven't opened a book in years. Guess when I last went swimming, finished a crossword puzzle, baked spenacopita." "You could quit," mused Giannis. Calliope leaned across the desk and nearly clunked foreheads with the god. "And to prove to these ridiculous Sealy that I'm not up to the task? Never." "Well, at least you won't have to think about that computer for a while," Giannis stopped. A new device was sprouting from the crystal base on Callie's desk. It was the size of a hand for 10 seconds and then stretched until it was as broad as Giannis's shoulders. Then it turned on and went, ding! Behind Callie, helper brownies scurried from the walls, silently sweeping up the glass shards. The wind died down as a second battery of the small, wizened assistants emerged in overalls and caps, painting on a brand new window that turned translucent in minutes. A few waved at Giannis, who smiled back. The god had a soft spot for brownies, who wanted nothing more than to be useful. Talia, Yudi, and Arato were staring at their sister with admiration. "I know where you're coming from, dear sister," said Talia. "I inspire 5,289 viral vids on Arachne web every day, and I like them, and I leave snarky comments, and I start flame wars. It is relentless. I've just sent out inspirations for the next 60 volumes of fanfic crossovers," said Arato. "I'm considering inspiring authors to kill everyone off. My nightmares are full of these characters." "Ladies," Giannis held out their hands for calm, "this is not boredom. You are all burned out." Callie looked offended. "I have never been on fire. I am not made of ash." "Metaphor, my dears." Giannis's tone was soothing, but a strange tickle in their mind was goading them to make this situation more dramatic. "Maybe I'm not entirely immune from inspiration," they thought. "It seems musery loves company." "It means you are so engaged you can't disengage. You are like a candle with no more wick. Ting!" Callie clenched her fists. "Foxtacular!" Giannis called to a window repair brownie with a swirl of hair piled so high it doubled the size of his head. "Please adjust Calliope's computer settings unless you plan to return in an hour to paint a fresh window." The brownie and his hair bowed to the deities and darted to the computer. A few button presses and there were no more tings. "All set, your worships," he said, and trotted back to the drying window to collect his supplies. Callie's trembles abated. "You goddesses deserve as much as humans," cried Giannis, now getting into the swing of their new idea. "More!" They'd never been a trickster, but they had watched Loki and Anansi's joint god talk on Arachne web a few times. Encouraging drama was an excellent way to brew trouble, which led to the stirring of stuff. This brings me to a human concept you will find tremendously appealing. They paused, enjoying the attention of so much beauty. When did you all last hang out? As in trees on ropes? Callie folded her arms. Metaphor, sweet sister. Talia turned to Giannis. I mean, it has been a tick. A knock came from the open office door. Cleo, muse of memory, wandered in from the hallway. I put it at nearly 500 years, she said. Recall when that intense Italian painter convinced us to pose? Tintoretto, Euterpe chirped. Good old Tintin. I heard there was a ruckus, said Cleo. Was there a ruckus? There was. Got it out of my system, Callie gripped her desk. You seem a bit drained, dear, Cleo tisked. Good thing I was in the building for a meeting. They had me holed up in that conference room where the T-Town map is, and we went on for ages. Those nutty Sealy want to start a new T-Town for reenactments of human history, featuring humans given too much wine. Naturally, I had to take that meeting, but now I see it was fated for me to join you. Loop me in. Giannis is godsplaining to us that we're not bored, just burned up. Callie brushed hair from her face. Out, you corrected Giannis. Burned out. You've overdone it, and you need a break. Humans have this problem. Ever wonder what they do in these circumstances? They go on vacation. Take a holiday. Yudi's minor notes turned to major chords. She shimmered. Giannis nodded. Callie relaxed, and she brightened. Vacation, Swimming, horseback riding, crossword puzzles, sleeping in, manicures, badminton! Karaoke, cried Yudi. A hot tub. Giannis was so excited they'd gone up on tiptoe. What a grand way to shake up the status quo. The Sealy could survive without their inspiration machine for a short while. They'd have to. And maybe, Giannis began to wonder, maybe they themselves could come up with a few stories of their own. With the ladies stepping away for a bit, they could have the whole of Muse Central to themselves. The god leaned forward, tapping their fingers together. I know of worlds you've never visited, they said. Olympus is so last millennium. And Athens is overrun with tourists. No, I have a better idea, a place where you could just be yourselves. And no one else is there? Cleo raised an eyebrow. We can be alone? Giannis's grin was pure Loki. Well, of course there are others there, but you just move them aside. You are goddesses. I want our own house, said Talia, with a pool. Yudi squeaked a sonata. I like the ocean. Callie tilted her head back. I require a badminton net out back. Cleo squeezed her sister's hand, and the others gravitated to Giannis as if they were the only one in the room who knew how to truly live. Yes, thought Giannis. They would go to the Trope Town map room. They would zoom in on villages until they found one with a pool, an ocean, and a badminton net. And that was where they would send the nine muses. Who cared if they got in someone else's way? They would leave and stay as long as they cared to. They were goddesses, after all. Ladies, said Giannis, eyes twinkling. Let's get you a galcation. Thank you.
There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
Mute myself. And thank you. That now that's the kind of fantasy that I started reading when I was little. I love that kind of stuff. It harkens back, I guess, to you know, like Worlds of If.
Oh, thanks.
The kind of thing that perhaps Galaxy might have published. And I just found it also, well, the word has to be used, enchanting.
I love that in Tune In Tomorrow, there was a brief scene where Giannis, who has been in the book the whole time, on and off, has a confrontation with the showrunner, Jason, who is a faun. And at some point, Giannis pulls rank on him and basically says, I am a god and you are nothing but, you know, a faun, right? Like, don't question me. And that really fueled this sort of concept of, okay, what happens if we pit the Sealy against actual, you know, demigods, yeah. Gods, and goddesses?
Yeah, for some reason it didn't wash, but I liked the TV series Chaos, K with a K.
Yeah, I liked that. Actually, it's funny, I had written this already, and then when I saw Chaos, I'm like, that is exactly like the vision I could imagine. I'm so sad they canceled it. They canceled it in like 6 weeks. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't understand why.
No.
A couple of people said to me it's too gory. Now, I hate gory.
Oh, please. I mean, you know, Netflix too gory? What?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stuff on Netflix that is way too gory.
Yes.
Cats isn't one of them.
No.
I mean, there's some nasty stuff in there. The gods are
gods, right? Like,
they can be nasty, especially when they're Jeff Goldblum, you know?
Well, you know, one of the things I'm exploring in all of my Tune In Tomorrow books is, and actually all of my books really, is the notion of what your perception of the world is like when you are semi-immortal or actually immortal, right? Like, we are basically pets to them. We're gone in 80 years, 100 years, right? Like, that's nothing. And how do you treat then sort of your sentient pets? And it doesn't always go well.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. It's Sheckley never actually used the gods, although the gods know his daughter, Lisa Quitney, certainly does, especially when she was working with the Gaiman who shall not be named.
Right, yeah.
But American Gods is one of my favorite books.
Absolutely, yeah. You can like the work without liking the author, right? Like, so
I have to separate the art from the artist, but yeah. I know the artist, you know, and
yeah.
Pardon me. Somebody turns up at ReaderCon every so often, and so I'm just annoyed.
Yeah.
An annoyed nerd. It's probably the best way to put that. But right. Again, these Olympic style stories. I mean, and in the meantime, why is there on Broadway two versions of Orpheus at the same time?
It's a very popular story. I mean, like, there's.
Well, sure.
They rework it and rework it. There was Orpheus in Chaos. You know, it's a very popular story. You get to have a rock musician be Orpheus.
That's right. Yes.
You know, I think Kat Valenti's take on it. I can't remember the exact name of the story, but she did a sort of modernized version of Orpheus.
Yeah. Okay. And Chaos is modernized. And,
yes. Yeah.
But there's that in Chaos. There's Hades Town.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of trying to throw all these things into a blender and see how they bounce off of one another.
It's great fiction, it's great stuff, and I don't mind when it reappears. So it's about time for us to sign off and play the outro music. But first, please repeat the location and the dates of your two upcoming events.
Okay. So Brooklyn Books and Booze, the reading series, is every third Tuesday, which means that it is tomorrow, the 20th. That's our January one. And then we have one every month after that on the third Tuesday. And then the other one is the Brooklyn Books and Booze Author Book Fair, which is going to be on February 7th. And if you go to brooklynbooksbooze.com, information on both of those is there. If you would like to pitch to an agent, there's still some slots available. There's a link on there where you can fill out a Google form to sign up for that sort of thing. And both of those events are free to attend.
Okay. So that's cool. I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it to the book fair.
Excellent.
Go on, Barbara. I would love to go to tomorrow night's event with Kushner and Swanwick, and I don't know the other two, so it would be a way to introduce myself.
Yeah, if you do, you definitely need to meet Caitlin Razakis. She's up and coming, and she also does funny fantasy stuff. So
cool.
Yeah, definitely.
But tomorrow I've got, like, appointments up and down the way it would be. That would be my third event of the day. And as it is, I'm slightly encumbered nowadays with a cane and pain.
Yeah. And you don't want to wear yourself out or set yourself back or anything like that.
So. Yeah. No, I definitely don't want that to happen.
I mean, we'd love to have you, but we understand if you can't make it.
Yeah.
But I'd love to be there. And so I ask listeners to be my proxy.
There you go. Please, everybody come out and then tell Jim all about it.
Yeah. And with any luck, maybe Barbara, well, we know that Barbara will be at the book fair.
Yes, Barbara is one of the authors at the book fair.
Yeah. Okay. And she has been one of the authors at Brooklyn Books and Boots.
That's right. She has done readings for us. I'll be one of the authors at the book fair also.
Yeah. And we may at some point reinitiate the New York Review of Science Fiction on, what was I, first Tuesdays, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we didn't conflict. Like, I've always done Tuesdays, and it never conflicted.
We made a big point of not conflicting.
Right, exactly. We wanted to make sure that was the case.
So I think it was first Tuesdays, and if it happens, it will be online. It will be virtual, because we don't have a physical space anymore.
Right.
That building has been sold.
Sadly, yeah.
WBAI is still there, but the bottom level is some lefty publisher. Yay. So.
We're getting the wrap-up signal here.
Yes, we are. So thank you, Randy Don, and take it away, Max.
Thank you for having me.
Check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing. Tune in to Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
Displaced playwright. Tuesday at 9 p.m. we'll be joined by theater maker Karen Coonrod to discuss the groundbreaking production of King Lear, featuring 10 renowned actors from stage and screen who embody King Lear and also shift into other characters, thus creating a radical takeover of both the text and the space.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, the cats drink coffee.
Before acting out 10 different versions of King Lear's cat, a radical